Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents That First Flight by Jen McMahon. Narrated by Alex Kidd and Lori West. Chapter 1. Oliver. You know what I hate more than anything in the world? Snow. This is the first time I've seen my brother's cabin since he purchased it at the end of summer. I've been itching to check it out, but couldn't find time. Now, due to an impending snowstorm, I'm the one up here making sure everything survives the fluffy white stuff with no damage. This town is where my brother Mark realized he was head over heels in love with Avery. I don't understand it myself, how people can just fall in love like that. The idea of it makes me queasy.
Your destination is on the right,
the GPS says through the truck speakers. I let out an audible groan as I maneuver the truck down the first entrance of the horseshoe-shaped driveway, while simultaneously thanking Mother Nature for keeping the snow to a flurry so I can make it here in one piece. His idea for buying such a giant property with a mansion-like cabin on it was for the entire family to use it as a getaway from city life whenever we needed a change of scenery. Except, I'm only partially here for that, thanks to this storm. They are calling it the winter storm of the century, which leaves Mark uneasy about this place while he whisks his now real fiancée, Avery, off to Paris for a surprise New Year's trip. My first reaction when he asked me to do him a solid was, "Why don't you ask Thomas?" But my oldest brother is living happily ever after in the honeymoon bliss stage of life. Again, how people fall in love like those two saps did is beyond me. As much as I love living in the city and being close to my two brothers and little sister, I'm not cut out for city life and the billionaire lifestyle my bank account tells me I should be living. I've learned that I'm more of a small-town guy from all the little towns I've traveled to. I drive a pickup truck when I'm in the city and live in dark-washed jeans and tees. I stick out like a sore thumb. It's one of the biggest reasons I started traveling the world and blogging it on my social media accounts. When Dad died, we all received an inheritance. Thomas used his share to invest in Dad's business. He took over in his early 20s and has been wildly successful. Mark used his share to buy his dream sports car and whatever else he decided to spend it on. Who the hell knows, because he was already successful in his real estate career. His boss just handed him the keys to the entire company a few months ago, and his life is more than he's ever dreamed of now that he's got the business and the girl. Emmeline, our baby sister, is working her way through nursing school. She didn't receive her inheritance until she turned 18 years old, but when she did, she used it to buy her own apartment in the city so she can start her independent living. I'm not a fan of it, if I'm being honest. I'm protective as hell over her and hate the thought of her living alone. We all are. I don't care that she's 22 years old now. She'll always be our baby sister. As for me, I used my share to buy myself the best camera money could buy and started traveling. My first trip was a small one to Charleston, South Carolina. My plan was to build up a few small blog posts to grow a following before spending money on bigger trips. Well, that one took off like a rocket. People from all over the world were enamored by the little bed and breakfast I stayed at for the weekend. The post was packed with pictures of the food I enjoyed at the restaurants, the coffee shop downtown, and a few shots of me at the beach. My best friend Logan swears up and down that it went as viral as it did because I was shirtless in the beach pictures. I take care of myself, so I can see why he thinks that. But I'll never know if that was really the reason or not. I certainly haven't stopped sharing random candid photos of me in my posts, though. My phone vibrates in my pocket. When I pull it out to see the name on the screen, I click accept right away because, speak of the devil, Logan. Hey. Hey yourself, Logan laughs. What are you up to tonight? Want to head out for the night? Unless you're planning to come to Roxbury and hit the corner gas stop that doubles as a bar, I don't think I'm making it. Shit, I forgot, you're house-sitting for Mark. House-sitting, working, solitude for a week, all the same shit, I laugh. He scoffs. This isn't work, this is you getting away. Work is when companies pay you to go away. Ever since that first blog post, about 90% of my trips have been fully sponsored by companies wanting me to promote their products, or businesses wanting me to visit and share my experience. The other 10% are me taking advantage of just having the luxury to travel the way I do. I'm not tied down by a wife and kids. Not to mention the fact that I love the variety of women I've found everywhere I go. You gonna find a local lady to whisk her away to your bed tonight? Not tonight, man. He sucks in an exaggerated gasp. You should find the nearest hospital up there when you're sightseeing, because you need to be checked. I usually really enjoy the different women I get to meet at each place I go to. I just haven't been feeling it on my last couple of trips. I can't pinpoint when, but I know it was sometime over the summer that I just stopped giving a shit about making that my priority. My brothers tell me all the time that someday I'll grow up and find that special someone. I beg to differ. As a people person, and wildly charming, might I add, I love chatting with locals everywhere I go. I've met plenty of people on my journey who live this single life until they are old and gray, and I've never seen them happier. Har har, I mock. Very funny. Listen, service blows up here. I'm heading inside the cabin now to get settled. Don't get in too much trouble tonight. Me? Never. And stay away from my sister, I add. Relax, he draws out. If you wanted me to stay away that badly, you should have taken me up there with you. One, I don't ever travel with people. You know this. And two, we're gonna murder you, you know. Enjoy your trip, Logan says in his most smug tone before he hangs up. Sometimes I can't tell if he's joking about my sister or if he's serious. Either way, he's been warned for years that she's off limits. I know Logan's history with women, and he's the last guy I want to see Emmeline end up with. I shake my head as I put the key into the front door of the cabin. Once inside, I take in the insane entryway of this place. For most people, this would be a dream home. Definitely not a second house to come visit here and there. Mark has lost his ever-loving mind. As I tour the place, a sense of happiness engulfs me. There's something about traveling alone that just fuels my soul in a way that brings me peace and solitude. It's why I never travel with friends or family unless it's for an event or some family function. I prefer it when it's just me, my camera, and my trusty tripod to take all the pictures I need. A week of just you and me, hot stuff. I slap my hand on the giant kitchen counter overlooking the mountains, talking to the house as if it's going to talk back. The sun is setting over the mountain peaks while snow flurries dance across the sky, and it's the most gorgeous sight I've ever seen in New York. Listen, I can hate the snow with a burning passion and still think it's the most beautiful thing Mother Nature creates. I grab my bag that I dropped by the front door to pull out my camera. I make my way to the back deck and snap a few photos. I'm in complete awe of nature's beauty. It's so raw, unfiltered, stunning. I'm killing two birds with one stone on this trip. Not only will I be helping my brother, but I'm also planning a blog post about this town, my home state, the only mountains I haven't visited in my posts. Scenic images are some of my most viral photos. I refuse to put a filter on anything and love to show the world the beauty that's out there in hopes it sparks inspiration for people to get out there, start traveling, and just live. Avery and Mark have already filled me in on a little bar and grill downtown from their first visit here, It's actually called Bar and Grill. Talk about lazy marketing, but I digress. They said it's good and I should hit it up immediately to mingle with some locals for more recommendations for the rest of the week. My stomach growling reminds me that I should probably head there sooner than later because I'm worse than a starved bear in the woods right now. Which is half true, since I'm already in the woods. Within 30 minutes, I'm pulling my truck into the parking lot. When my eyes land on the restaurant, I can't believe this is the place Mark recommended. It looks like it's about 100 years old. The brown siding on the outside looks worn down from the weather. When I step foot inside, though, it feels like a totally different place. There's a jukebox off to the side, and it's lit up with a soft glow from the beer signs and dim lighting. Off to the other side is a door that leads to the back. It's open, so I can see it's an outdoor patio with heaters spaced all over the place. I take back what I said. This place is cozy. Maybe even decent. I assume this is their busy season, noticing that almost every table is full and there's only a couple of chairs open at the bar. Which makes sense, since there's a ski resort half a mile up the road and they've gotten fresh snow this week. Not to mention, tomorrow is New Year's Eve. I take a seat on the stool at the far end of the bar. Just as I open the menu to see my choices, a nervous energy engulfs me. The hairs on the back of my neck rise while chills run down my spine. It's something I've never felt before. Everything shifts, and I feel on edge like something big is about to happen. What the fuck is that all about?
Chapter 2. Macy. Flora, are you good if I step out for a second to call Mackenzie? I ask my boss. Of course, sweets. You know you don't have to ask me to check in on her, she says. I laugh and roll my eyes at her. But I do. You know it's a busy Saturday night. I can't just step out from behind the bar without asking. We have everything handled here. Go. She shoos me with a bar rag, backing me up until I'm close to the kitchen doors. You forget I've been running this bar since before you were even a thought in this world. I return a smile and nod before stepping back into the kitchen. Flora and Samuel have been true angels on earth since I showed up in this small town of Roxbury. I came here 5 months ago with nothing but my daughter and two suitcases to get as far away from the shitty life we were living. I didn't know this was where I would end up, but I got a taxi from the airport and told the guy to take me as far as every dollar in my pocket would take me. When we pulled up to this bar, I wasn't sure how to approach things. The first order of business was to get a job before I put a hotel on a nearly maxed-out credit card. Flora's husband Samuel was working the bar that day, and there wasn't a soul in the place, since it was the hottest day of the summer in a ski resort town. He greeted me with an enthusiastic hello, and the first words out of my mouth were, "Do you have any job openings?" Looking back, I'm almost positive I made the worst first impression. I remember Samuel scanning me up and down, his eyes traveling along my exposed, tattooed skin, to my luggage and then to my 8-year-old daughter standing next to me. He somehow hired me on the spot. Turns out he and his wife had been working alone for the past few months and needed another set of hands before the busy season started come winter. Flora showed up at the bar about an hour later to meet the new bartender working for them. When she asked me where I was staying, I didn't have an answer for her. I was about to lie, but the look on her face told me that she knew I had nowhere to go. Something shifted in her features as she took in my tear-soaked cheeks, while a heavy silence hung in the air between us. It was that exact moment that these two took Mackenzie and I under their wings. They immediately got us set up in a small cottage on their property down the road later that night. It surprised me more than anything. In my experience, particularly with the older generation, when people see someone with tattoos, they tend to think the worst possible things about them. That they are taking part in shady business or are completely unprofessional. These two saw me for who I am within seconds of meeting me. And I spilled my entire story to Flora that night, only making them want to help me more. The small cottage on their property works for us. It only has one bed and exactly one small nook for someone to eat dinner. The kitchen consists of a small counter spot and only the necessary appliances. Flora invites us over to dinner more often than not, and Mackenzie likes to stay at the main house with them to watch television or play on her tablet. When it's time for bed, I sleep on the couch and let Mackenzie have the bed, because she deserves her own space. My daughter deserves the world. I can sacrifice a comfortable bed for a little while if it means a step towards a better future for us. One day, I'm going to give her everything she deserves. All of the hurt, all the brokenness. It will be worth it one day. "Hello," Mackenzie says as she answers the phone. "Yeah, my 8-year-old has a phone. I bought it for her with my first paycheck here because I wanted a way to get in touch with her on the days or nights I'm working behind the bar, even though she's never really alone. Samuel and Flora take turns with her. One is always with her while the other is always here with me, helping to make sure this bar runs smoothly. More often than not, it's Flora at the bar with me. Samuel has a soft spot for Mackenzie, since she reminds him so much of his two granddaughters. Unfortunately, they only see them about once a year because they live in California. He's the happiest person in any room when Mackenzie is around. "Hi, babe. I wanted to call and check in." "Mom," she huffs. "I'm fine for the 9th time tonight." I swear she's 8 going on 18. Her sass drives me wild, but it just shows me how strong she is. Stronger than I'll ever be. I swallow the lump in my throat. "What are you up to?"
"Uncle Sam is teaching me to use a bow and arrow. Our target is the deer grazing in the backyard. Then we're going to bring it to the shed and chop it up for dinner tomorrow."
"He is not," she laughs.
"Relax, Mom. We're just watching a movie."
I smile despite the fact that she can't see me through the phone.
"Okay. It's starting now. I'm going to go."
"Okay, babe. I'll see you in the morning. Make sure you go to bed when he tells you to."
"Okay. Love you,"
she says. "Love you most," I say back before I hang up. I lean against the deep freezer door in the kitchen and breathe out a sigh. This wasn't the life I dreamed of for us. Then again, my life plans didn't involve having a child at 16 years old and trying to figure it out on my own. I didn't want to do it alone, but I had to figure it out on my own. Mackenzie's father has never been in the picture. I was naive to believe that Brad, my high school sweetheart, was my soulmate. He was a year older than me, and I truly believed that he loved me at the time. It wasn't until the day those two pink lines showed up one morning and I told him that he was going to be a dad that he confessed I was nothing but a decent lay for him. He wanted nothing to do with me or our daughter after that. Once Mackenzie was born, I learned what true love felt like. Alone in the hospital, giving birth to the most perfect baby girl, I made a silent vow to myself that I would be the best damn mom I could be, one that she deserves, one that is nothing like my own. My friends dropped me from their lives when I got pregnant, and I'm betting my mom and dad wish they could, too. Needless to say, I've struggled a lot since she was born. I've hit rock bottom more times than I care to admit, and have thought things I'm scared to ever admit out loud. I lived with my parents through everything, despite the hell they gave me for getting knocked up. They are the true definition of kicking you while you're down. The sound of a plate falling to the ground pulls me out of my bubble. I give myself the time to take 3 deep breaths, fix my apron, and head out of the kitchen. "I'm back," I announce to Flora. "Thank you for that minute." "Any time, sweets." "Is everyone served? Where have you left off?" "That blonde hottie at the end of the bar just sat down." She winks. "That's all you." "Stop that. You're married." "I'm also older than dirt," she scoffs. "But my eyes still work just fine to notice from afar the looks on that man down there."
"You're crazy."
My words are cut short, and my steps falter at the same time my stomach bottoms out. I'm pretty sure my jaw falls to the floor when they land on the man reading the menu. Because I know this man. A heartbeat passes before I'm transported back to when I met him. It was when I was running away from my life to start a new one. On my flight from Montana to New York. Chapter 3. Macy. 5 months ago.
"You don't have any 2 seats next to each other on the plane?"
"I'm sorry, ma'am. The flight is booked solid," the gate attendant says. "If you want to wait, I can get you set up on the next flight to New York."
"When is that?" I ask, full of hope.
"Not for another 9 hours.
"Damn it," I groan. "Fine, I'll take these 2. I grab my tickets off the counter as Mackenzie and I make our way to the seats designated for all the passengers boarding the next flight out of Montana. I'm not waiting another 9 hours to get out of this hellhole. My decision to book a 1-way ticket to New York without telling a soul where I was going was initially just a plan to piss off my parents. Living with them is overbearing and miserable. They treat Mackenzie like she's theirs and make me feel like I'm incapable of being her mom. I constantly feel like I'm never even given the chance to be the mom I know I can be, with them hanging every mistake over my head. I know grandparents are amazing, as they should be, but I could never get past how much they have tried to take control over her. For the last few years, they have been trying to mold her into who they want her to be, and not who she wants to be. Mackenzie is my daughter, not theirs. Every waking moment is a chance for them to judge me on how I decide to parent her, whether it's what I feed her for dinner, or how I let her stay up until 9 instead of 8, and they never once miss the opportunity to throw my fuck-up of getting pregnant at 16 in my face. They constantly play on my weakness, my daughter. And I can't have her thinking that's normal. That's not what love is. I reached my breaking point late last night after yet another argument with them over what she had for dinner. She had pasta with meatballs, but it wasn't gluten-free and it's too heavy for a dinner before bed. The argument might seem minor, but it was the straw that broke the camel's back. I immediately packed 2 suitcases, and as soon as they left for work this morning, I took a taxi to the airport and knew I wanted to get us out of here as fast as I could. This trip has turned into me taking the first steps towards building the future I've always wanted, despite the guilt eating me alive over finally doing something for me. But when you spend 8 years caring for someone else and locked under the metaphorical chains of your parents who don't give a damn about your own goals, you realize that it's finally time for you to do something for yourself. I want to show my daughter that it's never too late to chase your dreams. To add to this train wreck of a morning, Mackenzie is not happy about this decision. I don't blame her. I'm pulling her from her school and all the friends she's made over the years. Small town living means you're in the same school with the same group of kids from kindergarten until high school. She's old enough to understand why we're doing it, but that doesn't make me feel less guilty for uprooting her entire life. A middle-aged man takes a seat next to me. He looks alone. "Hi, sir. Are you boarding this flight solo?"
"I am,"
he grunts in annoyance. "Any chance you're sitting by row 9 or row 23?
"I'm in row 9, actually. Why do you ask?"
"You see," I start but stop myself because I'm a known blabbermouth. I'll spill my entire life to a stranger out of pure nerves. "My daughter and I got separated with tickets, and I was wondering if you would be able to switch seats with me so I can sit next to her."
"Where are you sitting?"
"Row 23, I say.
"Sorry, no can do,"
he says matter-of-factly while shaking his head.
"Too far in the back for me. I want to get off the flight as fast as I can when we land."
"I understand." My head falls in defeat. We haven't even left the state, and I already feel like I'm failing my daughter. A twinge of panic sets in, causing me to falter and wonder if we really should be doing this.
"Mom, it's fine," Mackenzie nudges me with her elbow. "Once we're up in the air, the doors are locked, and I can't go anywhere."
"I know, but I can't stand you being that far away from me."
"I'm not a baby," she says with full conviction. "I'm almost a teenager. I can handle a flight. I have a book to read anyway."
"You're not almost a teenager," I snap back. "You still have a few more years to go before you are." She rolls her eyes, crossing her arms over her chest before she sinks into the seat. "But you're right," I admit, offering her a smile. "I know you can handle the flight. It's my job to worry about you, though. You have to understand that."
"I get it, Mom."
"How about this? When we land in New York, don't leave your seat until I get up to you, okay?"
"I can do that."
They let people off the plane row by row, so since I'm pretty far in the back, just wait in your seat.
"Got it."
Nervous energy dances through my stomach over the next half hour we sit and wait to board the plane. Who would have thought that the first flight I ever take in my life is to chase my dreams and give my girl a better life? I don't have a clue on how I'm going to do it and make it work, but I'll be damned if I don't try. Once we're finally on the plane, I make sure Mackenzie is situated in her seat. Thankfully, she's seated next to another parent with a daughter who looks to be about the same age as Mackenzie. Thank you, universe.
"Excuse me,"
I say to get the woman's attention. She smiles up at me. "I'm Macy, and this is Mackenzie. Our seats are separated on the flight. Would it be too much to ask to keep an eye on her for the flight?"
"Oh my gosh, of course,"
the woman says with her hand to her chest. "I brought some coloring books for the flight and a few extra snacks." My chest tightens at the kindness of this total stranger. "Thank you." I'm barely able to get the words out.
"Us moms have to stick together,"
she says with a wink. "I appreciate that so much," I say to the woman before I look back at Mackenzie. "I'm right in the back if you need anything, babe. I love you."
"Love you too, Mom,"
she smiles up at me. I make my way to the back of the plane and notice I have a middle seat. I groan internally at how annoying the middle seat seems. It looks like I'm about to be sandwiched between two strangers. I send up a silent prayer that they are plane sleepers and just leave me be. I look to my left, and the elderly woman next to me is already sound asleep. I glance up and over the seat in front of me and notice the entire flight has boarded, and the aisle seat to my right is still empty. I should have Mackenzie just come back here. Just as the thought crosses my mind, a man comes rushing onto the plane with a rolling carry-on, sunglasses, and a baseball cap that reads, "You had me at bacon." Once he reaches my row at the back of the plane, I realize this is the man that's going to occupy the vacant seat next to me. The flight attendant.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?